Welcome to the WWE Podcast, a weekly show dedicated to discussing the current pro wrestling product through all of the good.
AJ Styles is the WWE World Champion!
And the bad.
Number 30. The big dog is gonna hunt!
The WWE Podcast reviews every Raw, SmackDown Live, and WWE pay-per-view event, giving an unfiltered opinion, even sharing some favorite wrestling memories.
Oh, Stone Cold Steve Austin, thought he'd come out here and give you a little present right from the bottom of my heart.
Oh!
Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Austin just gets stuck in the stunner!
And now, here's your host, the man who doesn't play a bad guy on TV and loves sharing his passion for a Roman Reigns heel turn, Matt Corsell.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Thank you for joining me on this Friday or whenever you may be listening to this. And just a heads up, guys, if you hear some rumbling in the back and you're like, what the hell is that background noise? A thunderstorm is currently rolling through, so hopefully that doesn't detract too much from the show, but we're gonna plow through and we're gonna talk about WWE in just a moment. But for those of you who haven't joined me before, thank you for joining me. This is all about WWE. Do I talk about other things occasionally? Absolutely. I mean, if there's something really relevant going on in the world of sports or otherwise, I tend to touch on that. And So this isn't 100% WWE, but more often than not, this is pure wrestling. On this show. So if you guys want, and I encourage you, please check out my new website. Brand new design. It's about 95% of the way there. It's up. It's live. Let me know what you guys think. It's WWEpodcast.com. Completely redesigned from the ground up. I kept a lot of the same content, but just had someone really reformat it and update it and modernize it to 2017 standards, or at least what I hope is close to 2017 standards on the WWE platform. So I hope you guys enjoy it. It's WWEpodcast.com, and that's where all the posts and blogs and everything else is going to be there. There's a little touch of fitness as well. If you guys are interested in any kind of fitness advice, tips, or want to join a fitness group, there's that on there too, and I'd love to have you on board. So check it out, WWEpodcast.com. You can also tweet me if you guys are into the tweets. That's kind of where I'm at too. It's the _WWE _podcast. I like to say the WWE podcast, but someone else took that in that lovely name. So you guys find me, you'll see the logo, you'll know who I am. You can also go to Instagram. I am newly on Instagram, trying to get followers, kind of a newbie on there as far as really understanding it and getting used to it and interacting. So it's also WWE podcast on Instagram. So if you guys want to check me out there, I do a little bit of fitness talk too on there, more than I do on other social media platforms, but it's primarily WWE as well. So follow me there. So with all of that shameless plugging out of the way, all of that shameless really banter, we talk about something else very shameful in WWE. And typically I will go through Raw in a very orderly fashion, in a very congruent type of way that's sequential. The word is the word. I don't know what the hell word I'm looking for. But I usually just run through it start to finish with some of the main points. But this one is so bad and infuriating to the point where it doesn't quite top the Roman Reigns heel turn banter and push that I've been on for the last 2 years and rants that I've been on for 2 years. But hey, this one kind of struck a nerve with me. And that was the very controversial LeVar Bell, or Ball, whatever the hell his name is, segment on Raw, on Miz TV. This guy shows up on WWE TV and makes a mockery of WWE. I am very weary of any time WWE brings any kind of celebrity in. Because the golden rule is, if WWE brings in a celebrity, you can bet your bottom dollar that 99.9% of the time, they are going to make the celebrity look like $1 million. Because the celebrity isn't there to make WWE look good. Instead, WWE almost bows their collective heads in awe of the fact that we have a celebrity on our TV screen and on our program. My God, we could get some a crossover audience instead of really making this product look legitimate. Every time, although there's been very, very few exceptions, you have K-Fed and maybe one or two others. If I dug through the annals of my brain to dig it out, that outside of the very rare exception, you had so many celebrities come in and just make a mockery of this place that suddenly can get in and hang with the WWE superstars that you're seeing on a weekly basis, that these people that come in don't take the product seriously, make a joke of it, and discredit the product to the point where it's eye-rolling to the really even the casual viewer. You can't look at this. And I understand that it's getting attention. You know, this wasn't a segment that was meant to be good. It's meant to create it's about getting people to talk. It's about creating controversy. Okay, listen, if you're trying to create a brand that people want to get emotionally invested in, you have to create a product that is believable and that people get invested in the character, just like any movie, any TV show. You don't watch it just for, well, we know this isn't real, but we'll just watch it anyway. We want to get invested in a story. They're all about storytelling, right? But I can't get invested in the characters on the TV screen if you have people from the outside world, outside of this bubble of WWE, that come in and make the WWE superstars look like crap. And discredit the product and make it a laughing stock of a segment. And LeVar Bell is a prime example of that. Him going in there, going into business for himself. The other two guys sitting there, I don't even give a damn who they are. They're drafted by the Lakers. I don't give a shit. And I don't swear typically on this podcast, but this is the kind of stuff that really, really starts to get under my skin when WWE does this as a longtime fan. I know that this wasn't a segment made for the best hits of Monday Night Raw. I understand that. But this is a disaster of a segment waiting to happen. It was as bad as we all had feared it could possibly be, of LeVar Bell coming in there, not being nonsensical and being a obnoxious, discrediting jackass on WWE TV. It cannot be good. I don't care how Vince McMahon spends it. Well, it puts us in the mainstream. It's got people talking. Yeah, that's wonderful. But here's the question, Vince. Why are people talking? Well, it doesn't matter. They're talking. It's got eyeballs. Bullshit. Because guess what that's going to do? It's going to turn off the casual fan. It's going to make those people that are kind of on the fence about watching Monday Night Raw roll their eyes or change the channel to something else when it's that bad. And you could argue, well, if it's, you know, sometimes really bad TV keeps people intrigued. Fine. Some people out there, some idiots out there, probably believe that this was good for WWE. This is not good for WWE. You know, any controversy is good controversy. I don't believe in that. I'm sorry. I do not believe in that. When you're trying to make a product believable, or at least I don't even know if that's the goal anymore because everything is just so exposed, outside of having the creative team come out and just literally book the matches as if, you know, that's literally where we're at. We are that close to kayfabe being completely dead. And that's what I want to believe. I can't get invested if you have guys like that come out and discredit the product and make it a mockery of what the superstars do day in, day out, put their blood and sweat on the line, and this jackass comes out and just starts mumbling nonsensical, really had like a thug type of just the way he spoke and just already aggressive towards The Miz, taking off his shirt. It was an embarrassment. A complete embarrassment, just like Snooki was an embarrassment, just like Bob Barker, although he was okay on the prices, he did an okay Price is Right segment back in the day when they had the guest hosting of Monday Night Raw. Some were complete disasters. All right, you had Floyd Money Mayweather come in, although their match with Big Show was at WrestleMania much better than expected. You know that the celebrity is going to come out on top. It's a joke. It is a joke, and it's frustrating as a fan to come in and go, well, okay, well, anybody coming in is just going to get the best of whomever is in the ring. They never get theirs. And I understand it could be a liability issue. Okay, well, you don't want the celebrities coming in. They're not going to risk their livelihood of taking a bump for the benefit of WWE. WWE looks at it as like, the celebrities coming in are walking on water, that they have this gold palace and WWE just kind of bows down to them instead of WWE caring about their own audience, their own loyal fan base, and how they view the product, and having these trash, and they are nothing less than trash celebrities coming in and making a mockery of WWE. And yes, it is a product that is scripted. It is a predetermined outcome. Fine, great. I get it, but these are athletes and they're busting their ass every single night for the fans and for the hardcore audience that actually gives a damn, and even the casual fan that gives a damn. This is an embarrassment to us. It is an embarrassment as a fan. It is an embarrassment. Those are the moments where you are embarrassed to be a fan. Just like when they have bunnies and teddy bears on SmackDown and Raw, that's an embarrassment. But when you have celebrities come in that are established, their own brand beyond WWE come in and make WWE look like a playground and are just totally discrediting the product, that is when it pisses me off and it doesn't do any good. I don't care if it's got people talking. It's got people talking for the wrong reasons and turns people off. Yes, great. It made headlines. Everybody's talking about how crappy or maybe somehow good that segment was, or just how entertaining in general it was. You can say, well, it doesn't matter what you thought. Yes, it does. Of course it does. Of course it does, because the hardcore audience, the loyal fans, are the lifeblood of WWE. Okay, and I don't know if maybe some people didn't care. I've had enough of the celebrity garbage. You know, anytime they bring in a celebrity, that they're going to make WWE look like complete crap. And this was no exception. And you put a live mic on this guy. And then you had, I don't even know his name, on commentary. My God, every time they go to LA, they got to put somebody in there. They got to bring somebody in to plug whatever crap that they're doing on the side that is above WWE, just not even recognizing or paying any kind of attention or respecting what's going on inside the match at the time, that they just throw a match on so the celebrity can get their plugs in, is crap. It is to me just one big advertisement that is really shoving WWE's product to the side, and I'm sick of it as a fan. I'm sick of it as eye-rolling crap content of celebrities being above the product in WWE's eyes. I'm tired of it. If they want to take a bump, great. If they want to take a bump, that's fine. You can do safe bumps that almost anybody can do that doesn't need to be trained. Okay, they can do things that, and you may say, well, what if they take a bump and it looks embarrassing? I'd rather have them take a bump that looks embarrassing than have them just make the WWE superstars look like complete fools every single time they're out there. All right, and I'm too fired up to go through a list of celebrities that WWE has brought in over the years that have made the product look like a joke, eye-rolling, children's type of programming. But this was just the latest example of a long line in history that WWE has with how they view celebrities coming in on their product. It is embarrassing. It's infuriating. It is just downright wrong for the superstars. And I know Braun Strowman had also come up and said on Twitter under his real name that, you know, he would have liked to stomp LeVar Bell in the middle of the ring. I don't blame you. I wanted to do the same damn thing, and I'm not even a wrestler in WWE. So that's that. All right. I end my rant. Let's talk about Monday Night Raw, and we'll skip over that segment since I already talked about it. But we're going to talk and start with Roman Reigns opening the show. Mostly boos, as expected. So thank you, fans. Reminds us last week. And, oh, wait. While I'm on this. You know, I recently got onto this whole Instagram deal, right? And, you know, there are a lot of Roman Reigns fan pages on Instagram. Many with hundreds of thousands of followers. Many. And that's great. But here's my challenge to you. Because the majority of these followers are female and or probably not of the age to even morally have or own an iPhone or cell phone. So that is the core audience for Roman Reigns, are children and women. So I'm going to put the children aside because they don't know any better. And they are just looking at WWE as, who are they positioning as who I'm supposed to like? And they be honest with you, they just don't have the mental capacity at that age to really think for themselves and maybe analyze or overanalyze to some detriment that I do at times. The fact of why WWE should even be positioning this guy as a babyface. So anyway, let's put the children aside. I'm going to talk directly to the women here. I want to know, and I want someone to tell me, how and why you cheer for this guy. And I want you to put aside that this guy looks like a model. And oh my God, his steel blue eyes. And my God, he just is a, he is a walking hair conditioning commercial. Put all that crap aside that to me is 90% of the reason that the women cheer for this guy is because, oh my God, he's just so sexy. I want you to explain to me, outside of that extremely superficial reason that you women love Roman Reigns. And I'm not saying all women do. I'm saying the majority of his core audience, his core supporters that cheer him is women. I want you to explain to me, tweet me, email me, info@WWE Podcast, tweet me, the WWE Podcast, or WWE Podcast on Instagram. Explain to me why you cheer for this man. I want reasons. Give me logic. I want to get inside your brain why you like this guy. Because, okay, fine, he's athletic. You could say he puts on good matches. Okay. You know, so do a lot of the heels in WWE. You know, so just because he puts on good matches, you're going to cheer for this guy? That is the reason? Or maybe he's a stand-up guy. Really? You're talking about a guy that comes out there and just looks like he's madder than hell every single week and looks like he'd rather be anywhere else but where he's at? And a guy that, I'm sorry, is 3 to 4 years into his career now and has yet to cut an A-plus promo? I understand he's been handicapped by a lot of the writing that has been piss poor for a lot of his career. Tater Tots is one of them. You know, a lot of the nonsense is, it's a lot of it is not his fault. But at the same time, this guy has been given more than enough time to prove that he can produce an A-plus promo. And you do need to produce that. I'm sorry if you're going to be a top guy that gets cheered by the audience. And my God, that is the, I don't care what WWE says. That is the goal for WWE, is to make this guy a top babyface that people cheer, that the next Stone Cold, the next John Cena. That is the goal, whether they say he gets, oh, it's a thunderous reaction. It's, oh, that's a reaction. Everybody boos him, but at the end of the match, they cheer him. That's a bunch of crap. That is a cop-out of, that is a cover-up for, hey, we failed to get this guy over as a babyface. So I want you women, there's the challenge. I'm laying it down right now. There's the gauntlet. Explain to me, by God, explain to me why you cheer for this man. Take the looks out of it, and I bet you don't have much of an answer. All right, let's move along here, guys. I'm fired up as hell today. All right, so Roman comes out, boos, and reminds us about last week when Samoa Joe put the coquina clutch on him and Braun Strowman came down to pick the bones. Roman said he accepts Strowman's challenge for the ambulance match at Great Balls of Fire, yet the announcers, by the way, before this, at the top of the show, said this match was already happening, so yeah, there was a little bit of a mix-up there, but fine. He says that he's going to take Strowman straight to hell because this is his yard. Yeah, I don't understand. It's his yard, so how's he going to bring him to hell? I don't know. But an ambulance backs into the arena. Reigns approaches it to find out the back of the ambulance is empty. Strowman then attacks Roman from behind, and the segment ends with Strowman putting Roman in the ambulance and drives away. So, strong segment. I'm a fan of Braun Strowman, as many other fans that have at least some kind of coherent ability to analyze for themselves why they cheer for certain guys and why they don't. So, you know what? And you know what? That is kind of a slight at Roman Reigns supporters. And listen, I love Roman Reigns as a heel and as a guy that I would, if he was in my draft and after this week after week, I would pick him in the top three guys. I love this guy as a heel and he belongs in WWE. He's a great athlete, obviously a great look. All you women out there that cheer for him, all of that. Absolutely. I would never, ever let Roman Reigns go. But he's just cast wrong. He is miscast, folks. There's no way to put it any other way. And it's been proven not just week after week, not just month after month, but now it's, listen, year after year, Vince. All right. So Elias, Samson, Cesaro, and Sheamus. It's quickly interrupted by the Hardys as they were about to perform, I guess, a trio for a musical number. Followed by Finn Balor for a six-man tag. And Josh Duhamel, folks. Josh Duhamel is on commentary. He says he met Vince McMahon backstage. Should he have said that? Yeah. Anyway, it's just always embarrassing to have celebrities on commentary or really on programming in general. Finn Balor ends up hitting the coup de grace on Cesaro for the win, and we move along. I'm not even going to talk about the LeVar Bell segment because we already went through that. It rivaled Bayley. This is your life. That's all I'll say about that. Dean even came out and said that he likes free t-shirts, but that's literally it. Okay, yeah, that made no sense. I think they just cut the segment short. It was so bad. Video recap of Cass's heel turn last week. Enzo comes out and calls Big Cass out to talk face-to-face. No new entrance music yet. I'm waiting for it. Enzo says he knows he has the biggest mouth in the room, but he refuses to let this brother bond be broken. He's willing to let the past be the past. Really emotional. Good promo here, and it's showing a lot of depth in Enzo's character. You know, he's not just this trash-talking, moonwalking, or no, excuse me, that's Carmella. He's not just a trash-talking, charismatic guy that is the one half of Enzo and Cass that can cut good promos, but he shows depth in emotion and emoting emotion and conveying emotion and allowing you to get sucked into how he feels. That is tough to do, and I think he comes across well, and he's really showing that he has depth as a performer, so I like that a lot. Cass says he's sorry, and extends his hand, and they hug and seemingly reconcile. You know, Cass, though, at the very last moment, closes lines Enzo at the top of the ramp. I thought they were going to end the segment. I thought maybe they would have stretched this out another week for Cass to just turn on Enzo next week, but they did it the last possible second, and he tosses Enzo down the ramp. Really good segment. It generated a lot of motion. I think the fans in attendance were also invested. It was a good segment. Big Cass threatens Corey Graves to stay out of his business, but he said that Kurt Angle told him he can't lay a finger on him. So whatever he has on Kurt Angle must be good. So this speculation of whatever the hell is going on with Kurt Angle and Corey Graves continues, which I think is ultimately going to be something with Triple H. I don't know how, which will lead to a match between Triple H and Kurt Angle. That's down the line, of course. This is a slow burn story. I'm cool with it. Let's see how it plays out. Seth Rollins versus Kurt Hawkins. Hawkins surprisingly gets in some decent offense at the beginning of the match. Rollins eventually gets the win with the knee to the face. Bray Wyatt promptly interrupts and says that he will be cleansed by the fire of a true god. And Seth, he tells Seth to give in to his true self or he will burn. I kind of get it, saying that Seth is not the man he's showing us right now. I mean, I kind of agree, or at least I somewhat was able to decode what Bray was saying this week, that you know, Seth is basically this sniveling, conniving, cheating human being underneath all of this suddenly I love all the fans face that he has on right now. So I get it. I get it, but I could really do without the whole I'm a god deal, and I could deal with all the laughing that's constant with Bray. I would like him to be a little more to the point, okay? So I've said that week after week. I won't say much more on that. Brock and Samoa Joe, easily the segment of the night here. Heyman says that Joe remains fearless, which proves Joe is a Samoan dumbass. He tells Joe that now is the time to start fearing Brock Lesnar. As Brock comes out, Joe attacks him from behind and puts the coquina clutch on Brock, who tries to fight out of it. But Joe keeps the lock on him, and he ends up turning like bright purple. It looked like a shoot. I mean, this is going to be a hell of a match. I think this is going to be a match where you have those moments that go, ooh, was that real? Was that real? That's the match I think we're going to have, and I can't wait for it. What I want to see next week for the go-home is Brock in absolute destruction mode. I want to see him come out in the middle of a match that he doesn't belong in, where it's like a six-man tag of maybe mid-carders that can be sacrificed that week and just be the sacrificial lambs for that particular moment, and have Brock just come out and demolish everyone. Brock is going to get his beast mode back next week. He may not get a whole lot of retaliation on Joe, which is fine. I want to wait for the pay-per-view for that. But it's going to heat Brock up a lot next week. If they don't, they're missing the boat. They need to reestablish Brock as just, you know what, maybe he gets on the mic next week. Have him come out, destroy the six guys in the match. F5s everywhere, suplexes everywhere. Have Brock just be beat red, sweating, and screaming. And maybe destroy an announce table or two. Threaten to beat up referees. Have him ejected from the arena as Joe screams at him. Something of that nature. Brock needs to bring it next week. And that is going to be a hell of a match. So hopefully they do that next week. I think that would be a perfect build. This has been a great build so far. This solidifies Joe as a main eventer. It solidifies his finish even more, which is very important, that it can even take down the beast. So this is going to be a very, very good, at least on paper and build-wise, has been very good, and I anticipate a hell of a match that could easily be one of the top matches of the year. Alexa Bliss confronts Nia backstage, and they're both saying they're both judging how they look. Alexa, to me, by the way, Alexa seems to be, and this is a compliment, she is like the Regina George of the women's division. If you guys haven't seen the movie Mean Girls, watch the Mean Girls. If you already have, you know what the hell I'm talking about. Regina George is Alexa Bliss. I wouldn't be surprised if she kind of used that movie as a template for her character, but it works. It works, and I love it. Good stuff. Women's Gauntlet match for the number one contendership for the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view. Nia beats Bayley. Thank God, because to me, Bayley's dead to me, unless she turns heel. Bayley is dead to me as this, I'm going to hug everyone to death. I'm going to hug my way to a championship and be a star, my God, I just want to be a superhero to all the little girls out there that if they put their minds to it, they can achieve anything. And don't hurt anybody, even if they hurt you, because it's not how you're going to get ahead in life. Bayley, you are dead to me. You're dead to me. I can't believe I'm saying that, but she is. I hope that, maybe if she turns heel, I will appreciate her a little more. But this soft hug us, I can't inflict pain on people character makes me want to vomit. Okay. Then Nia beats Bayley. Thank God, as I put on my paper here, I literally have thank God. Then she beats Mickie James. Dana Brooke is next and loses in about 10 seconds. But the only impressive thing we've seen from Dana Brooke in the last 4 months after breaking away from Charlotte is the little flip she did at her entrance. That's about the most amazing thing we've seen from her. Emma is next and is pinned within about 20 seconds. And then Sasha Banks is the final opponent. Sasha puts up, obviously, a much more of a fight as predicted and as it should have been. I like how this match wasn't back and forth. You know, like Nia beats Bayley, but then Mickie James beats Nia. It was Nia just steamrolling the women's division, you know, and her hurt. She lost to Sasha, but she wasn't hurt by this. You know, she went through four other women. Sasha was able to beat her, you could say, by her Nia going through four other women, and she was, you know, a little bit worn down by the time she got to Sasha. So it doesn't, it also stacks the women's division vertically. You don't want everyone going and being horizontal going, well, you know, this person could be this person. This person could be this person on any given night. No. I want to believe that this person has almost no chance of beating this person. So when it happens, it's a shock. Not, everybody's batting five. Everybody is, you know, their record is 500. So anybody can beat anybody. That's not how you want to build a roster. That's not how you move people up. That's how you move people side to side. And horizontal moves are never a good way to build stars. So I like it. You got to stack your roster vertically. So good job here. And so Sasha wins. And I don't know if this match was made in the main event just because of the backlash of WWE that they took from making the women look inferior after the Money in the Bank women's ladder match finish. But we'll get to that soon. So I don't know. Kurt just came out just to congratulate Sasha, I guess. I don't know. So that's how Raw ended. All right, let's get to SmackDown Live, and I will not take up any more of your time, folks. I promise. I know I'm a little bit talkative today and rambling, and I'm a little fired up. So Daniel Bryan opens the show talking about how proud he is of the women's evolution on SmackDown Live and tells us about the women's championship match tonight and the women's Money in the Bank ladder match part two for tonight. Carmella interrupts and talks about how the injustice that happened last week and restates the rules about no DQ and how the first woman to gain possession of the Money in the Bank briefcase wins the match. I mean, kind of is a good point. And so she, as a heel, she still has a good point. Restates about Sheamus and Seth being involved in past Money in the Bank men's ladder matches because of, and they, you know, they're they won because of interference. But again, she forgets that nobody has ever grabbed, nobody involved in the match. Daniel Bryan didn't say that. Nobody who wasn't involved in the match has ever taken the briefcase and handed it to somebody who was in the match. So I think she keeps forgetting that as a character. Ellsworth gets in the face of Daniel Bryan, saying he made up some injury because he couldn't cut it in the ring anymore. Daniel Bryan says he should fire him, but it's not about him tonight. He bans Ellsworth not just from the ringside, but from the arena. And here's where I said, and I said this before we saw the end of the show, that why not tell Ellsworth if you somehow find your way back into the arena and you interfere, you will be fired. That's how he should have said it, to completely seal all possible holes. But he didn't. Security takes him from the ring. And by the way, security did an awful job of a 140-pound Ellsworth somehow still escaping, you know, four or five pretty big guys that are in security. That security team should be fired, and I'll get more on that in a minute, too. The Hype Bros versus the Usos. The Usos win fairly quickly. I don't see the Hype Bros remaining the Hype Bros for long, by the way. I see Zack Ryder taking a little bit of a heel turn because of maybe Mojo, him getting jealous of Mojo while he was gone. I think that would be a good story. I think that Mojo is much better off by himself. He started to establish an identity for himself away from, don't just get hyped, stay hyped. I think he actually took a step back by rejoining Zack Ryder in the Hype Bros. So I think that this would be a right move for both careers if they were to split them up and turn Zack Ryder heel. All right, so let's say we have the New Day enter after the Usos win, and they challenge the Usos to Battleground for the Tag Team Championships. Usos say, what for? We already beat you. But guess what? Then they just accept. But that I don't understand. They're heels. They shouldn't just accept. But Kofi then drops a rap on the Usos, and they leave. And guys, we're getting a wrap-off next week. Can't wait. The Fashion Files interrogation of the Ascension. It goes completely, you know, it does go completely against the fact that these two have any kind of rivalry, you know, but with the Ascension kind of playing along with this segment, but it had its moments. This is so Kevin Dunn and Vince McMahon and sports entertainment-y. It had its moments of like the Eddie Money tickets, which were funny, but I don't know. This is, they sacrifice a lot of believability for the sports entertainment-y crap. So I'm kind of mixed on my feelings on this, but I'll let it slide even though it completely goes against what I'm supposed to believe. Lana versus Naomi for the Women's Championship. Lana attacks Naomi from behind to get an early advantage, but then Naomi takes over and wins with the split leg and moonsault really quickly. I don't know why they did this. Lana just – I don't know if they were not wanting to risk Lana having a terrible match. I don't know why they did this so quickly, but – just establishing Naomi, and I'm getting a little bit tired of Naomi as champion because to me she's not a babyface to me. I know she's a fighting champion, but she talks gangster at times, like, you know, she's uneducated. She has heel tendencies and heel promo feelings to her. I'm going to snatch you up, laughing at Lana when she came out in a very obnoxious way when Lana made her debut on SmackDown. I'm not a fan of her being the SmackDown Women's Champion right now. But then you say, well, who would you give it to? Becky Lynch, hands down. Because she is one of the more real characters on SmackDown Live. I think she's done a great job the last 2 weeks of not cutting promos, but talking about how she feels about things. And so, to me, you've got enough heel champions right now. You do need some babyface champions. So, get it off, Naomi. I'm not feeling her glow. I'm not feeling her ridiculous intro anymore. You know, I don't know how much more stuff that she's going to come out that glow. It was originally just her shoes, and then she got like her jacket. Now she's got like a whole wig. It's so soft when she explained what glow even meant. You know, she explained it as the glow is your inner fight. You know, when you think your back's against the wall. You can do it. You know, it's so corporate. Everything has become so soft. And I'm not talking about bringing blood and guts and violence and thumbtacks and barbed wire and tables with flames, you know, engulfing them. I'm just talking about everything feels so corporate. It's like everybody has been washed in the corporate bath of WWE. Like everybody has to go through this corporate training of almost hypnotism of you will be a soft character. You will carry the corporate flag. It's almost like Vince McMahon does these hypnotism sessions, or even more, probably Stephanie McMahon. Philanthropy is the future of this company. You will never swear in your promo, and you will want to be heroes for the children of WWE. I really believe that is what is on part of the training in WWE's, if there is a training regimen, that is probably the first thing they do. It's sickening because that is not what creates success as a product. Yeah, all your stockholders are happy, and I understand it's a publicly traded company, and you absolutely have to make sure that they are happy, but my God, if you want long-term success, you have to, you know, at some point, look yourselves in the mirror and go, what's our identity? Is our identity worrying about what if the kids have someone to look up to? Is that really what we are? This isn't story time. You know, we're not Sesame Street, okay? You know, we can have characters that are edgy and make you believe that they are actually those characters instead of everybody worrying and caring about, I've just worked my whole life of, my God, I just wanted to be a WWE superstar. My God, I'm here. How about somebody just comes in and kicks ass and says, WWE is lucky to have me? What about that? Instead of everybody just bowing down to the suits of WWE. It's just sickening. All right. I love WWE, guys. Whether you believe me or not, it's just kind of a rant Friday. I love WWE. I am a fan for life. So this is just some of the stuff and trends I've noticed over the last like 5 years or so. And I don't know. Maybe just being the growing up in the Attitude Era has numbed me to and really just kind of set the bar so high that it's hard to come back down to this soft corporate kind of PC sensitive Susan G. Komen and taking breaks in the middle of the show like an intermission to even bring heels and baby faces together to talk about curing cancer and Connor's cure. I mean, they're all awesome causes. I'm all for them. But you cannot cannibalize your own product by doing this. It's infuriatingly hard to stomach as a long-term fan. So everything's just so corporate PC crap. It's not everybody. You know, Brock is an exception. Joe seems like an exception. AJ Styles, although he's gotten kind of touched by the WWE corporate feel, he's still kind of out there. Kevin Owens out there too. I love them. And guys, I'm a fan of WWE. It's just the corporate culture, especially Miss Stephanie McMahon, who even puts in her Twitter profile, I play a bad guy on TV. You got to be effing kidding me. Are you kidding me? Really? Oh, I thought you were really that person on TV, but you got to remind me on Twitter. You got to just tell me. Otherwise, I'm not going to know that that's not really you. I just have no idea what WWE is all about. So thank God you really cleared that up for me, that you're not really a bad guy on TV. Whew. Well, because I was just about to write to WWE saying, you got to get this person off out of the GM position. She's just awful. Whew. Well, thank God you cleared that up, Steph. All right. So, let's move along to the Aiden English singing segment. Randy Orton interrupts, and predictably, but I'm cool with it, RKO's Aiden English. He then sits in a chair and saying he isn't leaving until he gets what he wants. Threatens to continue beating up Jinder Mahal, basically everywhere he goes, if he doesn't get a rematch for the WWE Championship. Orton really intense as Shane comes out and just give him what he just gives Orton what he wants. No earning it, which just because he's Randy Orton, I mean, he already got his rematch. So anyway, whatever. Shane then says that it'll be up to Jinder to pick the stipulation. Jinder comes out and picks the Punjabi prison match. And look, guys, I know there's a lot of backlash on this stipulation. The last competitor in that was Great Khali. Great Khali was an attraction. He is nowhere near the athleticism of today's performers. So it's been 10 years, okay? We can't judge that entire match on 10 years. Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal are exceptionally much better athletes than I don't know if it was Batista and Khali. I'll have to go back, but I know the Great Khali was the only one that WWE ever had that I know of. So, guys, give it time, okay? I'm not going to crap all over this stipulation like everybody else seems to be. I'm going to give it time because these two have the chance to really show what this match can do. It's been a decade. Let's let it breathe. I know everyone's like, oh, again, really? It's been 10 years. So, all right, let's move along. And then we get Mike and Maria Kanellis, who were interrupted by Sami Zayn, who faced Baron Corbin. Corbin won clean with the End of Days. Shinsuke is backstage watching the match and asked if we will see a one-on-one match. Shinsuke says Corbin is dangerous, but he has a fear of what he can do. So looks like we're going to get a Corbin Nakamura rivalry and a Zayn and Mike Kanellis rivalry in the next coming weeks. That is my assumption, which I'm fine with. I think that Corbin and Nakamura could be a very good tandem together. And so All right, let's get to the women's Money in the Bank ladder match. Why does it look like half the competitors take a nap on the outside at every single ladder match? It's just, it's weird. Also, and it's not just the women here that are guilty of this too, but it's the men. With the ladder matches, it's almost as if they forget how to climb. It's like they're 2 years old, or excuse me, probably one and a half, 1 year old, whenever you know, children take their first steps. It's like they are a year and a half old trying to take their first steps. They just don't know how to go up the ladder. These are world-class athletes, and they have the opportunity of their careers, and they just can't get up there in time. I mean, they also hesitate when their opponents are down. They all pause when everyone's down, like they're waiting for a reaction from the crowd or soaking the moment in. You know, it's just not what people would do if this was a shoot. Considering what's at stake, you wouldn't pause. You would haul your ass up there as fast as you could go. And these are world-class athletes that do 450 splashes and moonsaults and enziguris and all these, you know, these flying moves off the top rope. But when it comes to the ladder, they just forget how to do it. And they just, when an opportune time comes, they just pause and look around instead of just going for it. Men and women are guilty of this in WWE. So I don't know. And by the way, Tamina, was she really trapped under there? There was a good 4 inches between her neck and the ladder. But okay, JBL, we'll go with it. Carmella wins after Ellsworth comes through the crowd. And it looks like we're about to have a repeat finish, which I would have loved, to be honest with you. Until Becky appears and knocks Ellsworth off the ladder. But it allows Carmella to hit Becky with a chair and grab the briefcase herself. So to me, I'm cool with it. I would have loved to have seen WWE come up with the balls to do the same exact finish. But Carmella keeping the belt, keeping the Money in the Bank briefcase, I'm all for. I think she's a great Money in the Bank briefcase holder. She is starting to come into her own. And the only thing here is Daniel Bryan looked really foolish by not threatening to fire Ellsworth if he enters the building. Also, how awful is the security in the building that he was able to not only re-enter the building, not only make it onto the floor, which is the second layer of security, but make it all the way to the ring and have time to interfere in the match without a single security guard chasing him. How is that possible? I mean, these are the things, it just makes no sense. If he had a group of security guards chasing him and Ellsworth does what he needs to do and then takes the bump and security drags him out, I mean, that still would have been infuriating. He was able to even get in the building considering how scrawny he kind of is. And the fact that Daniel didn't threaten to fire him if he still got in the building. There's a lot of loopholes here that it was just, you kind of go, okay, well, whatever. Ellsworth is getting a lot of heat right now. I'm cool with that. Him and Carmella are doing much more than I ever thought or could have expected them to do. So I'm cool with it. I like Carmella as the Money in the Bank briefcase holder, and we'll have to see where we go. So guys, again, thank you for joining me. Check out WWEPodcast.com. Go to The WWE Podcast on Twitter or WWE Podcast on Instagram. You guys can follow me there. All my thoughts and everything else is also a little bit of fitness thrown in. So, guys, until then, have a happy, safe 4th of July. Everybody have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next time.